listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Do with your life. Running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at Time.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things that you wanted to do, need do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, I know you got it done anyway, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And we appreciate you for that. So continue to do it. Continue to persevere. Because we need all the help we can get. And you know it. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look at the podcast. Click on that. Then you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. And then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Previous programs that are dated and titled. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., but the other programs that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Right after this program, on Monday and Wednesday, the Black People Matrix from 1 to 3 with Brother Franklin Jones. The Black People Matrix from 1 to 3 with Brother Franklin Jones. Monday evenings, all times I'm going to give, of course, our Eastern Time, so you adjust accordingly. Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia. Acres of Diamonds with Brother Wahad. And right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365. Here's a special note of Let's Buy Black 365 that is on Mondays from 8 to 9. To somewhat degree of a cooperative was formed by We Buy Black because they wanted to get a grocery store here in the Atlanta area. And they had 13,881 contributions, and they raised $430,000. They need 1.2 to fully complete the project. The supermarket is going to be called Soul Food Market. Soul, S-O-L. Soul Food, excuse me, S-O-L. S-O-U-L. Soul. And it's going to, just like what We Buy Black does, every product that they're going to sell possibly is going to be produced in, by us. The produce from the African farmers here in the Southeast, here in Georgia and Alabama and so forth, that will be their outlet to sell their produce. And I'm quite sure it's going to be outstanding. And so keep an eye out for it. If you're online, to look for it. But We Buy Black. Go to We Buy Black and make your contributions. You know, this is a co-op kind of situation, but of course, you know, I'm still feeling because of us lifting us and what happened to us. So I'm still feeling that, and that's not, I'll get to us lifting us in a minute. So if you see it, go on there or go to webuyblack.com and make your contributions so we can have a super, because the idea, it's the same idea as us lifting us, is to have these in cities across the country, particularly where we're predominant. Because it's a damn shame that this city and all its counties that the city is in, there's not one black supermarket. Not one. And a lot of other things that we're, you know, don't have and should have. So after We Buy Black, from 8 to 9, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. Conversation Reparations with Sister Jamoke and Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. Let me get back on track here. Tuesday, 8 p.m. to 10, Dr. William Rogers with Black Reality Think Tank. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, you know what time it is. That's right. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Fridays at 8 p.m. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. ain't me. It is Sister POC and her program Revive on Sunday at 11 a.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. is time for an awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time to 12 a.m., it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media, the Warren Ballantyne Show. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832, WeBuyBlack.com. And so the brother from WeBuyBlack.com is striving to create a supermarket. So go online to WeBuyBlack.com and make a contribution if you can, if you wish. Please do. Please do. You know, I'm always asking us to make contributions, but hey, that's what we have to do. That's what we have to do. So also, too, remember that if you don't want to go online and you're in the Atlanta area, go to the Greenbrier Mall right off the Georgia Highway 166, and there will be the Greenbrier Mall, and you will, right into Greenbrier Mall, We Buy Black has a kiosk selling the products that they produce, the laundry detergent, the deodorants, the toothpaste, toothbrushes, batteries, all of that right there at WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tahimba is ready to go. This week in the 22nd, he's taking brothers and sisters to Johannesburg and Cape Town. And once again, these are very affordable, even the one I'm going to talk about in a minute with Renoco. I mean, $3,700, and you're going to go to Cape Town and Johannesburg all that time, luxury hotels, all of that stuff. It's just like his Ghana trip coming up next month, the 24th of December to January 4th, is also $3,700. So go online to, if you want to see pictures, go to facebook.com/Bomani. But if you want to see videos, you show you the bus, the hotel they stayed. I mean, it's well worth it. YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Okay. Shrine of the Black Madonna. I was just there this past weekend in the history program. Brothers and sisters, the history program is just starting. So you're going to be at the beginning of the program, and it's going to take, he said, about a year to go through all of the program in some kind of chronological order, in historical order. So he's at the very beginning. So brothers and sisters, if you can, the Shrine of the Black Madonna, every Saturday from 1:30 to 3:30, the African history class of Know Thyself. Brother Olatunji does an outstanding job. And if you got something to share, please come and do that. 1:33. But if you would like that information, because you can't, for whatever the reason, attend the classes, but you want the information, they do have a multimedia library, which is now 7 terabytes of African enlightenment. I'm going to be talking to Brother Olatunji after the Kwanzaa celebration, because, you know, I got 4.5. So I'm, you know, I'm 2.5 away from getting the whole field at the moment. So I'm going to find out how I'm going to be able to do that. But all those video files, images, audio files, books, and so forth, movies. Because one day my internet went down, and I just for a good while, and I was on that thing, and I was like, man, impressed with all of the videos I had and movies and so stuff from long ago. It's great. So you need to get that. Shrine of the Black Madonna. Of course, they have everything. They got furniture, clothing, artwork, artifacts. They got the guy's shoes, the red, black, and green shoes. They got Kwanzaa kits. They got, you name it. Check out the Shrine of the Black Madonna.
the open Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7, Sunday from 1 to 3. They're closed on Monday and Tuesday. And once again, they also have an African Holocaust Museum that you can visit. So, the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Another bookstore another bookstore is the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, which is located right next to the kiosk of We Buy Black. The Medu Bookstore, 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263. And they have the finest selection of books, cards, greeting cards, T-shirts, all kind of good stuff right there in the Greenbrier Mall. And the other bookstore I promote is my good brother and friend, Brother Azende Ajamu, at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. The number to call Brother Gazimde is 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. And if he has the book you want, go pick it up. And if he don't, he'll get it for you, just like the shrine would. Okay? Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, their Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night at 9 p.m. on Blog Talk. And number to call, go on their website, www.usliftingus.com. Us Lifting Up, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Us Lifting Us, every Thursday night at 9 p.m., 929-477-2789. That's the number to call. It's 929-477-2789. How you can become a member, go online and become a member of Us Lifting Us. Akabin Institute, Brother Baba Barudi, I'm going to talk about his program in a minute. It was just outstanding, very moving, very emotional. Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Please make check money order out to Akabin Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But if you want to use Cash App or PayPal, the dollar sign, YAA, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and you can send that contribution to Akabin Institute through Cash App or PayPal. Sanjay-Haiti.org, my good sister Gabrielle Aurelia in Haiti. She's in the northeastern portion of Haiti in the rural area doing fantastic things of helping young children learn. And I mean, it's just beautiful. Go online and check it out. And if you feel in your heart to support it, please do. Sonje-Haiti.org. Sanjay-Haiti. Black Talk Radio Project, Black Talk Radio Network, we're part of Black Talk Radio Network. Brother Scotty Reed, he has a fundraising project. It's the Black Talk Radio Project's 2019 Media Fund. We want to stay current. We want to be able to do what we're doing here in a better way. We are reaching many people, and we need your help to continue in that effort. So please support the Black Talk Radio Network Fund. In fact, you go online to Black Talk Radio Project. You don't have to go nowhere. You just scroll down, look to the right, and you'll see the donation button right there. But they also have a link for the program as well. Before I do Enye Sesim, I'm going to talk about the Kibuka this Saturday. Also, too, Sister Yah has a program coming up, Sister Yah Barudi, and that's going to be December 10th. You also can have this program online on Facebook. There's a $10 donation. It's going to be at the Akabin Institute. It is the African Warrior Women's Day, Sister Yah Barudi, and there'll be questions and answers. That is Tuesday, December 10th at the Akabin Institute at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9:30. Also, you can follow it online on Facebook. Number to call is 404-753-7237, 404-753-7237. They had the Kibuka this past Saturday at the Sweet Spot, standing room only crowd, and about I'd say at least about 70, 80, maybe 90 young people who were packed in to give a clear example. You see pictures, but a physical example of what our people had to endure going through that so-called middle. In fact, the word not even is middle passage. Is Nartuze Otoku. Nartuze Okoku, I believe I'm pronouncing it correct, but it is that waterway between Africa and this hemisphere. It means a genocidal forced migration, exile, and captivity. The term addresses both the who and the why of how we were captured and brought here. And this process is a systematic effort to completely and permanently sever us from all psychological and genetic memory of ourselves. It wholly supplants the middle passage as a descriptor because no way do the words middle passage speak to the horror Africans experience crossing the Comedic Ocean. It indicates nothing more than location, middle, between Africa and this land, while passage only speaks to a route taken. So I'm going to get the correct. In Toruze Otoku. Otoku. Kibuka. Ikango word meaning remember. Like Sankofa, it demands that we struggle to remember the most deeply hidden intricacies of what we have lost and use that memory to rebuild our future in line with our ancestral traditions. Hell of a cost. Holocaust is defined as a conscious, malicious, genocidal attempt of one people to slaughter another people. The Holocaust most are familiar with a family infighting, an ethnic cleansing, or Europeans practicing Judaism by other Europeans. Even though the term applies to what Yorugu Caucasians have attempted to do to us to create clarity, we use the term hell of a cost to distinguish in name and magnitude what was done to us by all of them from what was done to a group of them by them. Maafa. This term refers to the entirety of the effort Europeans and other non-African people have put into trying to destroy the African continent, African culture, and African people. However, the European nation is our focus because they have by far expended the greatest amount of time, thought, and energy toward our genocidal destruction now that the Maafa is still upon us. Understand, the Maafa is still upon us. Slave trade. I hate that word. I say captives. I don't say slave. I say captive because we weren't slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We never submitted, and we will never submit. Is a misnomer because trade indicates an equal or fair exchange of goods and services. We weren't traded. We were stolen. Theft is not trade. We also do not want to use the word slave when referring to our ancestors. Slaves see themselves as rightful property of those who control them and believe in the correctness of their domination, and even willing to define and participate in it. Enslaved individuals, on the other hand, fully understand that they are only physically bound. They are consciously at war against those who attempt to restrain and oppress them. Africans were not slaves. They were enslaved. They were captives. And, of course, what Baba Baruti, Nya Baruti, and many people in our community are doing, it was a beautiful thing that even though how he was describing it was heart-wrenching, it was very emotional. It's deep. It's deep. The hell that we've gone through to capture the coffer lines of marching, you know, for miles, hundreds of miles, hundreds, maybe the thousand miles to get from whatever to the coast of Africa, to the west coast of Africa, to be taken from there to this hemisphere. All of it. And so what Baba Baruti and Yah and many others, we want our young people to be warriors. We are sovereignty seeking warriors, sovereignty. That's what I'm saying. If you listen to this program, you're going to hear four things dealing with African people. That's independence for us, self-determination for us, liberation for us, sovereignty for us. There are no other choices for us. The successful outcome of any nationalist movement is sovereignty for the people. Being sovereign means having absolute control over the life of the nation. Right now, as always, for African people, sovereignty is measured by how intelligent, independently, and powerfully we control our resources, our story, our culture, time, space, and destiny.
It is to have the power within the nation to control our lives and to control them in our best interest, regardless of opposition from outside. Accordingly, being sovereign has to mean that there is no one beyond us who makes any decisions about how we rule ourselves, how we live, what we believe, how we deal with enemies, whether those enemies are within, those traitors, or out, those aliens, and how we visualize our future and communicate and express that vision. It means that we are completely and consciously self-defining, self-determining, self-empowered, and self-respecting. And since no nation has ever risen to power and stayed there without holding their own tradition sacred, sovereignty necessarily means that we know, respect, protect, and extend in time through every coming generation. Who we are has a direct reflection of our ancestors. Sovereignty is our ultimate goal. Sovereignty. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. November 17th. Be a man, boy. Be a man. My good brother and friend, Brother Kenneth Zaki, outstanding artist. Very good artist. Boys must be correctly brought into manhood, and we have learned through many, many thousands of years of wisdom and practice that the most effective and lasting way of doing this is in orderly fashion, is through communal organized programs where experienced men lead boy initiates into the ways of their adult roles in society. We call these programs rites of passage. That is our tradition. African men should lead rites of passage programs for African boys. We must lead them if we want our boys to become men, especially only and truly know how to be men. It should be obvious as to why this is so. We have lived in a society intent on confusing our way, and many of us have unwittingly fallen victim of its assault on African minds. Nevertheless, the aforementioned aforementioned of our experience still stands as to why it is African men's responsibility to bring African boys into manhood. For those wishing to do so, I would suggest reading Paul Hill Jr.'s Coming of Age, Nathan and Julia Hare's Bringing the Black Boy to Manhood, Jomo Kenyatta's Facing Mount Kenya, Anthony Ephraim Duncor, African Spirituality, Elaine Tedley's Sankofa, Africa Thought and Education, Ayikwe Amman's The Healers, and 2000 Season, Mary C. Lewis, her story, Black Female Rites of Passage. Yadi Mimi, I can't pronounce that name, Rites of Passage, Psychology of Female Power, and George G.M. James, Stolen Legacy, and R. Samboli Maasai, The Heartbeat of Indigenous Africa, and Mwali Mubarudi, Asafo. Asafo is warriors. The Asafo. Affirm, I am an adult who brings children into manhood. Affirm, I am an adult who brings children into manhood. November 18th. The mark of fear is not easily removed. Ernest Gaines. Our daughter was raised to not panic during times of distress. Through experience, she learned the reason for this teaching. She learned to stay calm in crisis situations, because it is only when peace within remains a practice consistent, regardless of circumstances, that individuals can make the time to carefully consider all of their and all of their aggressors' options and make wise, beneficial, self-preserving choices. I still marvel at over how this young teen was able to calmly follow my instructions to bring ice and gauze, finding old clothes and calling her mother has to keep her younger friend composed while blood gushed everywhere from the nearly 2-inch hole I had drilled in my hand. Ouch. You never know how effective lessons are until the unexpected happens. All the same, even though control over self in panic-reducing situations make them more manageable, an absence of panic does not remove the adrenaline-driven fear that is natural to humans.
Such reactions are genetically encoded so that we can automatically or quickly respond to potentially injurious dangers. However, how we respond to threats to ourselves and people's existence indicates how those innate responses have been socially trained. For there is a distinct difference between bravery and cowardice in how our deals with threats which generate fear. With time, the record of our responses tells us and others of the quality of our character as warriors. Affirm, courage defines me in the face of any danger to African people. Affirm, courage defines me in the face of any danger to African people. Ashe. The Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. I didn't get a chance to talk about what I wanted to talk about. The British, you know, if you heard me talk about this before, I have a deep disdain and disgust for the British and the British so-called empire. The sun never sets on the British. The biggest captors and enslavers of our people, the British. And the reason why I have such deep disdain is just like Christianity. When you purport yourself to be historic, like Christianity supposedly is, and yet there is nothing to prove that you are historic, that these people actually lived and existed, then you deserve criticism. The British Empire has changed the narrative of how people should look at them. You see, the Brits are in the on television, in magazines, on the internet all the time. The Queen, her old ass, the Prince, the Princess Marco, and all this old bull. I hate the British. But of course, because they control the narrative, they have people. They have people all the time. If you watch the national news, anything, all the time, the Brits. I've seen some stuff today. You will always find it. And of course, the movies they have out, Alton Downey or some stuff like that. And there's another movie, The Crown, that's streaming on HBO or something, I guess. I don't know. But you see those and you think how calm and how angelic and how beautiful and how all this so bull. How did Britain get the wealth that it has? How did the sun never able to set on the British Empire? How did that happen? How is Australia in existence, New Zealand? How is the Tasmanian people eliminated totally? How is India affected in all of Africa? Every colony that Britain has, and they had the most. They had the most. How is it that Cecil Rhodes and his theft creating later what would be a scholarship to learn at Oxford or Cambridge or whatever? And be so prestigious, a Rhodes Scholar. And that's some deep indoctrination. I remember the brother that played for Florida State, and there's another brother I just seen recently, I had to comment on it. He played for Florida State. And he, I guess he had some kind of oral examination or something that was happening. And they showed him coming in at halftime. He played, I think, a year or two in the NFL. But, of course, now he's going to be a neurosurgeon, I believe it is, whatever. And that's beautiful because the intelligence of African people is just phenomenal, especially when you consider what we've gone through. But anyway, you know, and every people were hailing, clapping, oh, Rhodes Scholar. How did Rhodes, and who is, it's Cecil damn Rhodes, the thief, the murderer. That wealth is ours. But no, I don't want to get it in a Rhodes. No, I wanted to take it, and we call it something else. Damn Cecil Rhodes.
But you got to understand, brothers and sisters, that a brother or sister getting a scholarship in the name of this murderous son of a Cecil Rhodes is tantamount, the same as a European Jew getting a scholarship in the name of Adolf Hitler. You know that wouldn't happen, but it happens with us because why? The ignorance and the oppression of Europeans on our everyday lives. That's why on this program, I fight, discuss, and present information that is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for us as African people. There is no other discussion. And I don't want to debate with somebody whether or not we should be free or not, whether or not we should be doing our own. Oh, that's stupid. I don't engage in that. I want to find out how. What do you think is the best way to make that a reality? What do you think we should be doing? I want to play the sister. After I read this piece on Britain, I want to play the sister who was the ambassador of the AU. I can't remember what country she's from. But they took her ambassadorship away because she was speaking truth. I never use the term speaking truth to power. That's messed up. I don't want to use that term. Just speak truth. Because power is the ability to define reality. That's what power is. That's what power is. Can you define reality? Can you shape reality in your image and interest? Do you have that ability? If you do, you have power. Power is not money. Power is not politics or voting. Power is information. Power is not information. No, it's not. Information is not power. You've been receiving information that is so flawed and inaccurate in the educational system, in the media. No, power is the ability to define reality, then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. That's Dr. Wade Nobles. I think that it's definitive. So in order for us to have real African power, we must shape and fashion our lives and our vision, in our interests. That's what we must do. That's what real power is, to control. Didn't I just read you what sovereignty means? That's power. Rape, genocide, and a cover-up. How Britain tortured and killed 300,000 Kenyans. Like I said, I have such deep disdain for the British, and particularly today, because the British's image, as they were able to do, is a very clean image. The Brits are, it's almost like, you know, when we wrote, what's that damn song that I hate? Amazing Grace. When the Caucasians supposedly had a vision of how evil it was to, what he was doing and wrote Amazing Grace to save a wretch like me. And we sing that damn song. I remember Brock sung that song. Can't remember. I think he sung that song, when the people in South Carolina died, got murdered by the Caucasian. I hate that song. You know, so no, you know, and even though the Britons, because of the conflicts, they stopped the transportation of captivity. They didn't stop the implementation of the oppression on captives, on enslaved Africans. They didn't do that. And of course, what they did in colonization is even deeper. They had most, they're the ones that had the most of African land, even to this damn day. In Kenya, the British would pour pepper into the genitals of women, crush the testicles of men, rip them off and make them eat the testicles, sodomize prisoners with bottles and brooms. By 1960, over 300,000 Kikuyu were either unaccounted for or dead. Some British folks are delusional. Others are ignorant. Some are both, but a few have the guts to face the truth. What is the truth of British Empire in Kenya? The truth is the Kikuyu blood sinking into the land, stolen from the same curculio by Caucasians, playing an elaborate game of finders keepers commissioned by the British royalty. The truth, modern Britons have no balls to accept are crushed and ripped out of the testicles of curculio men, mutilated breasts of women, as well as cut off ears and fingers. Beneficiaries of imperialism are blinded by their privilege to the gouging of curculio eyes by the colonist machinery. And they are too busy on the colonial gravy train that they do not realize that in Kenya, men were dragged by land rovers until they were disintegrated into chunks of savagery food, some scavenger food. These are the truths modern Britons refused to tell until it was forced to. And even when it did, numerous people attempted to downplay the ruthlessness of the British imperialist machinery. In 2012, the British Foreign Office was humiliated by its own dishonesty, which had spawned for decades until then. It was revealed that the British systematically destroyed evidence that would have exposed the evil of its imperialist machine to the world. The Guardian reported these papers that had survived the purge were flown secretly to Britain, where they were hidden for 50 years in a secret Foreign Office archive, beyond the reach of historians and members of the public, and in breach of illegal obligations for them to be transferred into the public domain. It was dishonest and most unfortunate, but the truth proved too big a secret to hide. The paper showed that ministers in London knew the Kikuyu were being tortured and killed in Kenya, who remained silent. They also showed that Ian MacLeod, Secretary of the State of the Colonies, directed these post-independent governments should not get any material that might embarrass Her Majesty's government. All Britain wanted to do was save face, but the blood of Kikuyu would tell a different story and escape the labyrinth of Britain's lies and deceit. A claim for compensation filed in 2009 by five members of the British torture, the Mantu case, took the tables and forced the Foreign Office to embarrass itself by releasing damaging papers. Years later, the British government publicly accepted wrongdoing in Kenya. The story of the British brutality in Kenya took a macabre turn on the 20th October 1952, when a state of emergency was declared by Sir Evelyn Baring as a response to the Mau Mau uprising. According to Benjamin Fogelsbaum in his book, The Imperial Endgame, Britain's Dirty Wars, the term Mau Mau is one with no meaning in the Kikuyu language, but might have been Europeans' distortion of the Kikuyu word Mamu, being an oath. In the initial stages, the Kikuyu faced 8,251 full-time, 6,480 were part-time, and 1,645 full-time members of the Kenyan Police Reserves, 3,900 soldiers of the British Army, and 360 tribal police. These numbers are said to have greatly increased with time. The contingency was not there for games. David Anderson, in his account, History of the Hanged in Kenya, says during the entire emergency in Kenya from 1952 to 1960, a total number of settlers who died were 32. From 1952 to 1960, a total number of settlers who died were 32. There were fewer than 200 British soldiers and policemen killed, and 1,800 loyal Africans to Britain. As for the Kikuyu, in the census held in Kenya after emergency, it was revealed that over 300,000 Kikuyu had been either killed or missing. The official figure of the number of Kikuyu who died was never known. Elkins, in Imperial Reckoning, writes that the system of over 100 detention camps called pipelines were used to hold Kikuyu suspects of having sworn an oath against colonialism. Caucasian officers sexually abused both men and women detainees. And Barbara Castle, writing for the Tribune in 1955, said, in the heart of the British Empire, in Kenya, there is a police state where the rule of law has broken down, where the murder, rape, and torture of Africans by Europeans goes unpunished, and where the authorities contrive at its violation. Elkins said, some victims' skin was burnt off, and they were forced to eat their own castrated testicles. One particular Kuru man was slowly electrocuted to death, his testicles and ears already cut off while one eyeball hung out of his socket. The men were sodomized by the guards and with bottles, brooms. Animals and insects were forced into their rectums. They were pinned to the ground or tied to tables while their penises and testicles were beaten and then torn off of their bodies. Fighters were tied to backs of Land Rovers and driven around the village to slowly and painfully deaths, to slow, painful deaths. Men and women were made to run around with toilet buckets on their head, and some were even made to eat the excrement in the bucket. Sometimes men would be forced to carry the decomposing bodies of killed insurgents unearthed by the British officers. Some were swung around and around by their hair, while others were held the necks and their heads banged together until they were unconscious. Pepper and water mixtures were sometimes poured into the vaginas of groaning and vomiting women. Erkin uses census analysis to conclude that between 130,000 and 300,000 Kikuyu were unaccounted for by the end of the state of emergency. That's just an unfortunate glimpse. Brothers and sisters, there is no parallel. There is none in history. I know other people have been done wrong, but for the duration and the execution and the implementation of the horrors that African people have had, we ain't talking about a decade or two. We're talking about centuries. Just as Chancellor Williams said, we have been under attack for 3,000 years. For 2,000 years, I'm sorry, I'm going to be correct. Probably longer, though, because they were always trying to attack us because of the jealousy of those outside of us for the glory that we had in ancient Kemet. The Greeks, you know, it was interesting. I saw a clip of John G. Jackson, one of our great historians, our great warrior scholars historian, John G. Jackson. He was saying, you know, we taught the European twice. We had to help them understand that they must eliminate that savagery. We taught them twice. They came to sit at our feet. One of the books that was mentioned in the Inye Sesim, the Baba Barudi mentioned, was a book that George G.M. James wrote, Stolen Legacy. Some must read of how Greece and all this notion of superiority and philosophy and the father of this and the father of that. That whole thing needs to be studied because these were the perverted individuals along with the Romans. So they studied at our feet. They used Kemet as the breadbasket for the Roman Empire. When Kemet was in such a deep decline at the time, when the Greeks came in and they wound up with Alexander the so-called great, and then when he died, the Ptolemies. They didn't go back to Greece. You know, they didn't want to be buried in Greece. In fact, when Socrates studied at the feet of African people, he went back to Greece. What happened? That's right. They made him drink poison. They made him drink Kimlock. How dare you bring these foreign ideas and concepts in here? But that's what built their foundation. And the same with Rome. We taught them then. And then when they went into the Dark Age, that medieval age. The Africans who have been influenced in Northern Africa and moving into the western part of Asia. Not Europe. Hell with Europe. Europe ain't no damn continent. European continent. By nobody's definition, but that is the arrogance and the boldness of Europeans. They say, we define. That's why I'm saying to you, power is the ability to define reality. They define that because they got power. They said, I don't give a damn what you say. I don't give a damn what the dictionary says, the definition of a continent. I say it's a continent. And so they taught them again with the Moors. They were 700 years. And then they got balls, Martel and Charlemagne. In 1492, when Columbus left out of the west coast of Spain or Portugal, looking for a route to India to get spices, not to flavor their food, but to put on their pockets and so forth, because they stank all to be damned. He sailed to this hemisphere. But also in 1492, the Europeans kicked out the Moors and the Sephardic Jews out of Spain. But they had taught them for 700 years how to get them damn animals out the so-called castles, how to take baths and showers, aqueduct system, the lighting system, algebra. We taught them again. But now that we're in a position that we must teach ourselves and we must break away. Remember the movie Get Out? Yep, that's it. Get out. Because not just are they, you know, doing what they're doing to us, but you see all the time the amount of us missing and organ harvesting and so forth. Brothers and sisters, there is no doubt in my mind that Pan-Africanism or perish. It is that or nothing else. There is no sense of talking about voting, talking about doing anything with these Caucasians. We must have, if we're going to be a free and self-determining people, if we're going to survive in this world and become players instead of the pawns, we must have sovereignty. I don't know about y'all, but I'm fired up today, man. I have no reason why, but I'm fired up. You know what I didn't do? I don't think I mentioned Renoco. I didn't. Let me take a little quick break here because I know we're coming up on the hour, so we're going to take a break here. But before I take that break, I'm going to mention Renoco Rashidi's trip, January 21st to the 4th, and his trip is only $3,800. He's going to Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau. And a treat in Senegal, you will be able to visit the radiocarbon dating laboratory established by the great scholar and historian, Dr. Cheikh Anta Diop. And so, of course, in Gambia, you're going to go to the village of Jafare, Kunta Kinte, on the Kambe Belongo, and then, of course, in the Guinea-Bissau. So it's a great trip. Contact Renoco. Go to his website, Dr. Renoco, drrunoko.com, Dr. Renoco, and check out the trips that he's planning. And next year, January 21st to February 4th, 2020. Brothers and sisters, we're going to take a break. When we come back from that break, we're going to continue this conversation. I want to play the sister who talks about colonialism. I'm going to be talking about that. Because we have to understand this is a global situation that Africans face. It's global. And I think that has... We don't have time. Time is of the essence. When you look at what is happening on the continent, when you look at what's happening with African people globally, time is now. Time was yesterday, damn it. Time is now. So you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie. On Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That was Donald Byrd and the Blackbirds, Flight Time, for your listening enjoyment. Once again, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, immediately following this program on Monday and Wednesday, is the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones. Also tonight from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. On Fridays, if it's Friday and 8 p.m. Eastern, you know what time it is. That's right. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday night at 7 p.m., it's once again Time for an Awakening. And every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking today about the brutality of the British and the effects of colonialism and the Berlin. I'm gonna do a deep thing on the Berlin Conference coming up, because has the sister who was the ambassador to the EU until she was removed because her truthfulness. Because one thing that the European don't want you to speak truth to them, they have a problem with that because they can't handle it. They suffer. The European suffers from cognitive dissonance. Even when you tell them that, no, you ain't superior, they can't handle it. They don't want to believe it. They ignore it. They dismiss it. They want to believe that what they have done was for all humanity. Cognitive dissonance. Because they can't handle it. They can't handle the truth. A Caucasian woman named Dr. D'Angelo was doing workshops, and she noticed that these Caucasians couldn't handle the fact of what they have done. So she labeled it white fragility. They're fragile. They don't want to believe the evil they have done. They want to believe they're good people. They spread the Christianity around the world. Yeah. Okay, we're going to play the sister here.
Hey, I don't know if you heard, but we just had a big development in the unfolding Spygate investigations.
I apologize. I'm hoping I'm getting the right program here. I apologize.
Welcome to the African Leadership Series, where we bring you great inspirational speeches from African leaders.
Good evening, African diaspora. The more I begin to understand not only our Africa, but the more I begin to understand us as Black people, why is it that we are the most disrespected people on earth, no matter where you find us on this globe? They often wondered why these Black people are so smart and so indestructible. Maybe it's because of that third eye. No, it is the melanin. That's what makes us special. That's what makes us the origin of humanity, which is our motherland. Our motherland, Africa. The continent with everything and anything the world needs. The continent that everybody is going to for their needs. But the continent that we, the children of Africa, are busy running away from. That keeps me up every night. The more I try to dig deeper in understanding as to why Africa is where Africa is today, I couldn't help but find myself repeatedly going back to the beginning to say, how did we end up where we are as Africans? How did we get here? Not only as black people, but as Africans. The colonizers started coming to Africa, starting with the Portuguese, followed with slavery. But by 1884, after they had been haphazardly going into our continent, looting from the Africans, pretty soon they started looting from each other the loot that they had looted from the Africans. And before you know it, they were killing each other. And they were getting ready to have a war, a European war, on the African soil. So Bismarck, the Chancellor of Germany at that time, called his sidekick Leopold, King Leopold of Belgium, said, listen, we got a problem. We're getting ready to kill each other and have a European war in Africa. Why don't we call all the colonizers? That was France, Germany, Italy, Spain, Portugal, Belgium, and of course the mighty Britain. Let's all meet in Berlin, Germany, and strategize on how we can organize ourselves so we can effectively see to it that Africa and her children are forever defeated and dominated. They proceeded to chop up our Africa into tiny little countries that we know of today. Economies that are designed to see to it that they will never make it on their own. And in the event those small economies do make it, they're easy to destabilize. Who, in their right mind, puts a country together like Gambia, Burundi, Togo, Djibouti, Lesotho, Swaziland, and many, if not all, African countries? Each one of them was given the same sovereignty as China, as India. If this world was to be a boxing game, you see, in boxing, they understand that heavyweights belong in the heavyweight boxing ring, middleweights in the middleweights, lightweights and wannabes in their rings. Wannabes are way out there. You don't take a wannabe boxer and throw them in the same ring with a heavyweight. But what's being done to our Africa, let's start negotiating. It's country against country. Countries, please stand up. Little Gambia stands up. And Gambia is supposed to negotiate with China. Lesotho is supposed to negotiate with India. Swaziland must jump in with the United States. Djibouti, you must go in. You see, the Europeans realize as individual European countries, they can't make it. So they came together as the European Union. So they negotiate as a bloc. So yeah, Djibouti, you go in with EU. And when the African countries lose, the world stands back and says, oh, what's wrong with you, African countries? Why aren't you able to manage your people? How can that be? Where is the parity? African countries are wannabe boxers who are constantly being thrown into the heavyweight boxing ring, and we are getting our rear ends kicked day in and day out. 1884. Fast forward, 2019. Nothing has changed. The strategy that was put in place to see to it that Africa and her children are forever defeated and dominated remains alive and well. And yet in our minds we tend to think Berlin Conference is a thing of the past. Well, my brothers and sisters, Berlin Conference is alive and well. And allow me to take it home for you. Have you ever wondered why intra-Africa trade is sitting at 18%? I'll tell you why. With 43 different currencies on the continent, it's difficult to trade with each other because of the currencies. It's easier for us to exchange with the US dollar, with the euro, than with each other. Why is that, Berlin Conference? It's easier for Mozambique to send Mozambican oil outside Mozambique to Europe and everywhere else, just so Zimbabwe next door can buy it from across the oceans. It's easier for a company that's manufacturing the best ceramic tiles in Africa, in Egypt. That company sends its tiles to Italy, only for the Africans to turn around and buy the same tiles, 20, 30 times the cost. Why is it that we are not trading with each other? It's because, starting in South Africa, there's a road that goes up until maybe 2-3 kilometers from the border with Botswana. And that same road picks up 2-3 kilometers into Botswana. And if only we could connect the two. But Berlin Conference said, no, you're different. You're another country. You can't look at it this way. If we were to connect all the existing power lines in Africa today, we would provide electricity to 30 million more people. And in the process, we would save $20 billion. But the reason we can't connect the power lines, thanks to Berlin Conference, we're different countries. We can cross that border. Why are our children crossing the Mediterranean in search of nothing? It's because little Gambia can only create so many jobs. And a young man in Gambia, which is surrounded by Senegal, cannot go to Senegal and look for a job. Thanks to the Berlin Conference. Question then becomes, if you look at all the issues we are dealing with today in Africa, one by one, every one of them relates back to the Berlin Conference and our inability to work together as one continent, one Africa, speaking with one voice. Thanks to Berlin Conference.
If you like informative and educative videos about Africa, make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell to get our latest videos.
Welcome back.
No matter where you find us, on this globe. They often wondered why these black people are so smart.
Having some technical difficulties here. Let me get it together. Thank you. And welcome back once again, brothers and sisters. That sister was removed of her ambassadorship. She was eliminated by the so-called powers that be because of the truth she spoke. And but my thing is that the more of us who gain consciousness, the more of us who have no fear, the more of us who understand the most important thing that we should be doing is developing the mechanisms to be free self-determining, independent, liberated, and sovereign as a people, the more we'll be under attack. Because right now, Africans aren't needed. That's why there is a direct attempt to eliminate Africans on the planet. Bill Gates is one of the leaders in vaccines. And I saw a piece, and he said about vaccines, you know, because my contention is that vaccines are to help people get healthier. And like, he said, yes, the vaccines we got for population control. Yeah. The same with all the other Europeans who decreased Africans' population. See, their population is not growing naturally because of how and who and what they are. They're experiencing zero to negative, mostly negative population growth around the world. Around the world. Here in this country, strangely enough, Africans, we, us, American Africans, we've been experiencing zero population growth because of a number of factors. Our population is younger, so you would think that would be more. We were like 17-18%. And now they're saying we only 13%. How? What happened? Why has it decreased? I understand why the Europeans have decreased. They've been talking about the demographics. The demographers have been saying by the year 2050, now it's 2030. 10 years from now, Caucasians, Europeans, white folk will be a, quote, so-called minority number in this country, particularly because of Latinos or Hispanics and the influx of them either legally or illegally. They have overtaken us. We were, of course, the number one, and we were the ones that were fighting the hardest for brothers and sisters to have, you know, to have. We were the ones fighting for people to have rights and inclusion and all that other kind of bull. We marched. We demonstrated. We rioted. All to really to no avail. Oh, some of us got some crumbs. A job here, a position there. Happy to move here. I'm the first one in this subdivision. And my daughter was the first one to go to this school. First. They're still talking about first here in 2020, damn near. I could give less than a rat's ass. So that sister was ousted as a UN ambassador to the AU because of the truth she spoke. You see, once somebody has
this
the courage.
This call is being recorded.
Once somebody has the courage to do what is necessary. First, they're attacked by their own, by us, the Negroes, the Negro surrogates that the European uses. And if that's not working, then they're going to do an all-out assault and ultimately will eventually kill that person. I mean, Muammar Gaddafi, as the president of the AU, was doing some fundamental, monumental things. The country of Libya was self-sustaining, was one of the richest countries in Africa. One of the richest countries in Africa because of the oil wealth that Libya had and obtaining gold and other things that Libya was doing. The people of Libya loved Muammar Gaddafi. He was what I would consider a benevolent dictator. Everything that was done was for the benefit of the Libyan people. They had free health care, energy. They even gave, when you married and so forth, they gave you a place to stay. The government of Muammar Gaddafi. But when he wanted to create the gold dinar and use it as a currency for all of Africa, what did your sister just say? Did you heard what the sister said? One of the problems is with all these currencies, all these divisions, all these marks. When you look at a political map of Africa and you see those lines, those imaginary boundaries were not drawn by us. Many of the names of the countries are not us. They're Europeans.
She said the effects of the Berlin Conference are still there today, and I understand. And she's right. Colonialism, neocolonialism, Negropeans. Let me catch a call here. 464-464. Good afternoon.
Hey, Oshie, what's happening, brother?
Hey, Jay, how are you today, man? Good.
I'm good. Hey, listen, man. I know you don't think that if the white man is the minority in this country, he still ain't going to have his foot up in the behind of these Negroes.
Man, please.
It's still going to be the
please,
daddy.
Please. I'm they saying, and you know what, Jay? I said that for those Negroes who believe, oh, now we're going to be the majority and we'll band together. And no. Hell, they had never been a majority in South Africa. They don't have a majority in South Africa, yet they still rule. In many other places, they were not the majority. But they recognize globally that they're dwindling. And so they're going to do anything and all things they can do to maintain their position of dominance and control. And you know
Negroes
what they do. They co-opt
the intelligence. Negroes don't have the intelligence, nor the wherewithal, nor the understanding, nor the commitment to ever put a foot in the ass of a Yoruba. They love the Yoruba. They want to be governed by the Yoruba. They want to feel and think that everything the Yoruba tell them to do, they supposed to do for them to be able to move forward in life and get to the ultimate goal, the Yoruba Sky Daddy. Negroes are sick. That's all Negroes are sick. I had to argue with a Christian today, and I just said I asked him one simple thing. I said, if I raped and killed your mother, would you accept anything I give to you? He said, no, I would try and kill you. I said, then bastard, why you accept that Bible? I said to him, why do you accept that Bible, you dumb bastard? You know what I mean? And he couldn't answer that. You see, the problem that we face as a people is we don't want to accept the fact. And I mean, the person that made the statement don't even feel this way anymore. 30-some years ago, I read it, and I'll never forget it, in the book by Hakeem Olabudi, From Plants to Planets. And his quote was, the white man is your perpetual enemy. And to this day, he don't believe it no more, but I believe it to my death.
I say, I do too.
Because he's shown it.
That's right. He's shown
I'll
that.
I'll never forget it. I asked him that question on the radio station. I said, Hakeem Olabudi, that statement that I read years ago changed my life. And I said, do you still believe that the white man is your perpetual enemy? And the Negro told me no. I was devastated. I was devastated. Knocked the wind out of me. How could you write the most profound statement that one could write at that time in our struggle? And then years later, because you now suffer from grandpa syndrome, that you feel as though the white man is our perpetual enemy and the bastard ain't did nothing to change it. You tell me what the white man, the Yoruba, the devil, the Antichrist, whatever the hell you want to refer to that stinking bastard is, has done to prove to you or to show you that he's not your perpetual enemy. Name me one thing.
You want me to name you one thing?
You can't name me one thing. You can't name me one thing. Now, a crazy Christian or one of those crazy Islamicans or one of those Hebrew Jews or someone else may try to tell me something different, but ain't no African in his same right mind going to tell me one thing, that the white man, the Yoruba, the devil, the Antichrist has done to change one's mind different. Can't name me one thing, brother.
Well, I tell you, they can't tell me sugar, honey, iced tea. You know, you would have been proud.
You'd have been proud this past Saturday with Baba Barudi at Kibuka. It's outstanding. Beautiful.
Oh, man. It's emotional. I know it was.
It was emotional. And then at the end, because of at the end of the Kibuka, because it leaves you so solemn, they had an additional piece, and that was when the young Safo, the warriors, the young people, the young brothers and sisters who were laying on the floor, just like we were laying in those ships, in loose pack, tight pack, sitting up, however how they wanted to transport us to get the most of us there to maximize the profit. Oh, man, it's hard. It's hard to think about this. It's hard to conceive.
That's why I have problems. That's why sometimes I have problems eating sardines, brother.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna lie to you, man.
Yeah.
I have problems sometimes eating sardines.
Because once you open up that can, that's how we were. When you open up that can of sardines and you see them tightly, that's how we were for 6 weeks. 6 weeks.
Think about that. How did you survive that, brother?
But listen,
about how strong the people we are to survive that. The Yoruku could never do that. He don't have the strength to do that.
Mentally or physically, to do that. No.
That's it.
And so what happened?
Let me ask you this right quick. Did Baba Barudi and his queen take the Kibuka?
No, unfortunately, no. This wasn't taped, far as I know. This was not taped. There have been. There are ones, you can see those probably on YouTube. Maybe they're not been removed. But towards the end, and so even though we were in that mindset, what they did at the end, the young brothers and sisters, the Watoto, the Asafu, the warriors, the Asafu, they came out with in a warrior position where they had weapons and guns and machetes and sticks or whatever, and they all grouped. Oh, yeah. And then Mama Marimba Ani, gave them a charge. Because what we are seeking is world African sovereignty.
Yes.
Nothing else. We're seeking world African sovereignty. You've heard what these crackers have done. Excuse me. You've heard what the Yoruba has done to us. Yeah, I know. But me and you, Jay, we know all the adjectives. But, you know, I promise. And sometimes, you know, I get very emotional.
Sometimes we forget.
I know
just
we do.
Like the white man forgetting human.
Yeah.
And we give him a pass for it.
You know.
We deserve to be able to forget every now and then about the nature of the filthy, stinking devil and what he is and what he's done. We can't make no excuses,
you know,
for how we feel about that filthy piece of garbage.
You know, and our existence here is tenuous at best when you consider the mentality that we as a people are experiencing because of the tax on the African mind, the tax on African psyche on 24/7, you know. I'm going to read this piece because I've been talking about the people who are one of the people I have great disdain the most, and that's the British.
Just put me on hold because I definitely want to hear it.
All right, brother. All right. Thank you, Jay. Yeah, you know, I'm adamant about my disdain and disgust with the British Empire, the sun never setting on the British Empire, you know, and all those Brits. And because just like Christianity that purports itself to be historical, the Brits and what they were able to do, the mentality of the people today, when they look at all of the information about the royals and how they are. And I remember seeing that old heifer sitting in a vault surrounded by gold bullion. Surrounded. You know, she has a coach that she rides in that's gold. I don't even think it's gold. I think it's straight up gold. I don't even think the damn thing is plated, you know, and all of the stuff that they have done. 44% of Britons are still proud of the UK's history, which includes genocide, captivity, and massacres of people of color. This is on Atlanta Black Star a few years ago. One of the contributors, Brother David Love. Some people yearn for the good old days of colonialism, which were a living nightmare for African people. Why is that so? A poll conducted in the UK found that a sizable number of people think the British Empire was a good thing. conducted by YouGov in advance of an Oxford Union debate on removing the statue of that son of a Cecil Rhodes from outside Oral College. The poll found that 43% of Britons had a favorable view of the empire, as The Guardian reported, while 44% thought the nation's history of colonialism was a proud one. A mere 19% said Britain's empire was bad, while only 21% believe historic colonialism is regrettable. Fully half of the UK Independent Party voters and 34% of conservatives say Britain views its history too negatively and ignores all the good it did. It contrasts young people, 40%, and labor votes, 43%, believe that given the oppression, murder, and injustice involved, Britain's view of their history is too positive a light. In July of 2014, a YouGov survey found that 49% of Britons believe the colonized countries were better off due to their colonization versus 15% who said they were worse off. Moreover, 34% wanted Britain to have an empire today. 34% said they want to have an empire. They still really do. It's just quasi, you know, just like colonialism. It's neocolonialism, you know. And they because, see, once again, what did I say? The European suffers from cognitive dissonance. They believe they're superior. And even though there's a mountain of evidence to prove otherwise, they dismiss it. They ignore it. Because they believe that they are superior. In addition, as the Rhodes Must Fall monument has gained traction in an effort to remove the statue of the brutal and racist colonizer, 59% of Britons think the statue should stay exactly where it is. Only 11% approve of it, while 29 are just, they don't give a damn. And I know that one African country moved a statue of Gandhi finally, but you could still go if you want to, because although I haven't been here in a year, to the King Center here in Atlanta, and there's a statue of Gandhi, you know. And obviously the light of what Gandhi was and who he was and later came to light, I believe, I would hope that Dr. King, who based his protests on nonviolent protests of what Gandhi was doing in India, only because they had no weapons. You think they would have had a nonviolent protest if they had access to some weapons? They didn't have it. So they knew this is how we got to deal with this. It was a strategy. And he hated African people. When he was in South Africa, he was calling us the Kaffir just like the cracker was. Just like the Caucasian was. The European was, you know. You know, so Scots showered the highest support for removal of the statue, the Scots, followed by the Londoners and Labour voters at 18% apiece. The UKIP and Conservative voters are the most enthusiastic supporters of the Rhodes statue at 75% and 78%, respectively. Rhodes systematically slaughtered Africans to make clear the land for the Anglo-Saxon Caucasians who he said were needed to save Africa from itself. A BBC noted, Rhodes believed the English were the masters and once said, I contend that we are the first in the world and that the more of the world we inhabit, it is better for the human. See, they have race in here, but I don't use race. There's cultures. What the European did was impose its culture on other people. No such thing as race. And in an 1887 speech by Prime Minister of the British Cape Colony, he said, the native is to be treated as a child and denied the franchise. We must adopt a system of disposition. Despotism in our relationship with the barbarians of South Africa. In 1894, Rhodes introduced the Glen Grey Act, which was to dislocate Africans from their ancestral lands for the benefit of industrial development. Counterpunch noted that Rhodes once said, I prefer land to niggers.
as it peaked in 1822, one-fifth of the world's population and one-quarter of the land were under the boot of Britain. One-fifth of the world's population and one-quarter of the land around the world was under the boot of Britain. Consider what Britain colonization meant for Africans and Caribbean people. For example, there was the Mau Mau massacre in Kenya, which we read about earlier, the Kikuyu, in which the British put down an uprising against Caucasians. According to Kenyan Human Rights Commission, 90,000 Kenyans were executed, maimed, or tortured, and 160,000 people were detained in horrendous conditions. Over 300,000 Kikuyu were killed. Britain had not paid reparations. Once again, Britain has not paid reparations to Caribbean for our captivity, which according to one calculation amounts to an estimate of $5 trillion in unpaid labor, $3.6 trillion in unjust enrichment to the British economy, and another $1.4 trillion in pain and suffering for the total of $10 trillion. However, British gave reparations to 46,000 Britons who were owners and captors when that captivity was abolished, representing what would be $24 billion in today's terms. The largest single bailout in that country's history up until the 2019 bank bailout. Meanwhile, 800,000 formerly enslaved Africans received nothing for their pain and suffering and were forced to work for free for 50 hours a week for years after they were supposedly emancipated. And in India, during the 1919 Armistice Massacre, the British killed between 400 and 1,000 people who protested colonial rule and injured another 1,100 within 10 minutes, according to the Independence. And in 1947, the British partitioning of India, which created Pakistan, led to a sectarian violence leading up to 1 million Britons leading up to 1 million deaths. Moreover, during the British Empire, 12 to 29 million Indians died of starvation and famine to the exportation of wheat to Britain. They grow it right there. But you can't have none. They exported it to Britain. In 1943 alone, when Winston Churchill diverted food to Britain, soldiers in other countries as famine plagued Bengal, up to 4 million Bengalese starved to death. Churchill said, "I hate Indians. They are a beastly people with a beastly religion. The famine was their own fault for breeding like rabbits." Meanwhile, the British committed genocide against the African Aboriginal people of Australia. Their numbers dwindled from 1 million to just like 100,000 in the first 100 years after the 1788 British invasion. By 1911, 90% of the Aboriginal people had been exterminated and they were placed in concentration camps. On the island of Tasmania between 1804 and 1834, in 30 years, the Tasmanian population of as many as 15,000 was decimated, with only a couple hundred remaining, as women were raped, men were used for target practice, and the babies were roasted. And so, this is the legacy of imperialism that Britain remembers with such pride. Telling you, we have a caller. You have a caller right here. Is that Paul?
Good morning, good afternoon.
Hey, brother Paul from the UK. Usually have something that notices that. Now they got an unknown caller piece here. But I'm glad to hear from you. How you doing, man? And thank you for the communications.
Absolutely, my brother. Absolutely. You know, fantastic rendition. Brilliant communication. Brilliant information you're passing over.
Yeah. Well, I know you're right there in, as you said, in the belly of the beast, the one who has orchestrated this whole thing.
No. Brother Ochi, man.
I was born in the east end of London, a place called Hackney.
Okay.
And that place is the brain of the beast.
Oh, the brain of the beast. That. Okay.
Let me tell you, this is the brain of the beast, and I can tell you why. You've heard Brother Franklin tell you that the center where they conjure all the magic is the Tavistock Institute.
Yes.
That's probably about half an hour away from where I live.
Okay.
You know, something.
Okay.
So, you know, these people have been at it a long time. You know, I've said it before on your platform. You know, the American so-called American history teaches you about the founding fathers, but they don't teach you about Sir Francis Bacon,
right? Yeah,
who actually was the Lord Chancellor of this country, who was a good friend to King James. Yeah, the same person who wrote the Bible. He's the one who put the plan together to come to the new America. He's the one. He's the one who they call, who they give you this alias Shakespeare. That's an alias for Sir Francis Bacon, if you didn't know. Yeah. William Shakespeare was a complete work of fiction.
Right. That's what I've been saying. I've heard that. But people keep saying it. Absolutely. It's the pictures that Shakespeare was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right now. Know that because it's all a Masonic operation. It was a Masonic operation from the word go.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So that was the plan. But you know, you're talking about the Marmars, and it's interesting, yeah, because you said that they won their court case in the High Court in London. Yeah, that's right. One of the things which I would like you to know is that it was a bit of an injustice to them. The law firm. I haven't got their name to book, but anybody can look it up on the internet. When you look at what the Marmars won, and then when you look at what they had to pay out in terms of legal fees, you'd question whether they really got justice or not. And that's always the problem when you come to law, you understand. You know, obviously, the firm which approached them was an English firm. And, you know, going to court is an expensive business. So in reality, the question were they paid out enough? And the reason why I bring that up, and you bring a very serious point up, is because I just want to put out there, Brother Ochi, one of our arguments in terms of reparations, yeah, we have a grassroots movement, yeah, which we although most of us here are from the Caribbean,
okay,
in West Africa, yeah,
right.
We differ in our arguments. I just wanted to put it out there so people know this. Yeah, we differ in terms of how we see reparations to how CARICOM sees it. We differ.
Okay,
don't agree.
That's unfortunate. Yeah, that's unfortunate because I think that our argument should be a collective one argument for African people on the continent throughout the diaspora. You know, I seen a piece that a sister did, and she talked about the Rastas in Jamaica. They were arguing for not the regular Jamaicans, just the Rastas. They wanted reparations from the Queen and repatriation, you know, but not for those who are not Rasta. They didn't, I mean, it's almost like, you go for yourself. This is for what we're trying to do. And that's the same thing here with a group called ADOS, the American Descendants of Slaves. ADOS. And in fact, their whole thing, I don't know if you know about them or heard about them, but that's a very divisive problem.
No, I have heard about them. And but I would say this here, you know, I haven't read that piece and I don't know who the sister is. It might, you know, but the bottom line is that the Rastas in Jamaica, by the way, I don't know if you're aware of this. It's been said that the locks wearing the Rastas, you know, the locks on
right,
the head.
Right.
They actually took that from the Marmars. Did you know that?
Oh, no. See, that's another thing. Did not know that. No.
Yeah.
Although, but what I do know, you shouldn't call them dread locks. They're locks. The dread part came in with the European who was scared as hell when they saw brothers and sisters with their hair locked.
Absolutely. They actually took that in support of what was taking place with the Marmars, you know, because the Marmars refused to conform and, you know, they refused to cut their hair and stuff. So in solidarity with the Mormons.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Groups, started to and that's where many people say that's where it come out of. So there's many connections, but there in Jamaica there's another thing which you may not be aware of. There was a time in Jamaica where the Rastas were persecuted. In actual fact, I think it was Bustamante the first, the Prime Minister of Jamaica.
Mm.
He put out a rendition that any Rasta be found be killed on site.
Wow. Yeah? So they must have.
You're probably not aware.
They must have went up into the mountains for security and safety.
Well, let me explain some of that, because that's another misconception being put out here, my brother. And I have to tell the truth, no, they didn't. You know, the Rastas and the Maroons are not together. You have to understand. Well, let me explain to you, because you've probably never heard this before. But when they talk about reparations, I'm guessing they're not talking about reparations in terms of they're talking about reparations in terms of what the colonial government under the authority of the British were doing to them when they were persecuted, when Bustamante gave the rendition, any one of them be found, be killed on site. And they were getting captured, they were getting their hair cut off, they were getting killed, they were getting drawn, and all sorts of things happened to them. Yeah, and any Rasta who knows will tell you what happened. And that's what I think they're talking about in terms of reparations. Yeah, so... And then when you talk about Maroons, let me explain this to you. We have a Jamaican hero called Paul Bogle, okay? And there's a thing called the Morant Bay Rebellion, okay? Where enslaved Africans in Jamaica, Paul Bogle, who was a pastor, wrote to the Queen, I think it was the Queen Victoria. And he asked her, he was basically saying, we should be free now, and slavery had been abolished, and why we have to work on the land so much, and blah, 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 asking them to, free them up so they can buy up land and so on and so forth. She didn't answer the letter. Eventually, the soldiers were sent in, and many of them were shot. Anyway, it eventually ended up in the Morant Bay Rebellion. To cut a long story short, Paul Bogle got away, and he ran to the hills, just like he said. But what happened to him? The Maroons actually captured him, chopped him in his arm with a machete and took him back to the British. Let me make something clear to you. And if people of Maroon descent are not going to like this, but it's true. This is true for history. The Maroons signed the treaty with the British to capture any enslaved African. Do you get what I'm saying to you? Yeah? And this is something which has caused a lot of problem from then to now. You understand? That problem is still alive today.
But Brother Paul, we have to continue this conversation. I got to get ready to make way for Brother Franklin Jones and the Black People Matrix. But we have to continue this conversation, because this is some. I mean, I know that Baba A.C. Hilliard wrote an outstanding book, The Maroons in Us, and he chronicled a lot of that information. I'm not sure when I read that many years ago, about 20 years ago, that I came across where the Maroons were working with the British government to man.
Listen,
it's not surprising though.
All the time, but I'm just going to say this: we will finish it off. But there is a treaty between the Maroons and Maroons, by the way, is just a Spanish word which means free cattle. It's a very derogatory word. Mm-hmm. It's not fitting of a person. It doesn't describe a person.
Right. Anyway,
there was a treaty signed between the so-called Maroons and the British where they were used as slave catchers. So let's leave it there and we'll finish it off another time.
Oh, we sure will. Thank you, Brother Paul. Appreciate you, man, from calling across the pond and continue to listen and contribute. I appreciate that. If you get a chance to, please call in on Wednesday or whenever you can, my brother. Brother Jay?
I will do that. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Brother Jay.
Hotep, brother, you have a beautiful day.
I will, brother. Thank you so much.
And it's
man.
Good to hear Brother Paul.
Always. Peace. Always good to hear Brother Paul, man. Believe me. So you too, Brother Jay. You have a good day, man. Peace to you. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Dr. John Henry Clark quote, brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodia. Bivahodia means our victorious destiny. Bivahodia family. We'll be with you very soon. Peace.